If you don't like what we tell you to believe in, we'll kill you.
Is tedious on the right stuff.biz.
How blackpilled are the Heebs?
This is the good stuff, the right stuff.
Today on the Daily Show, number 1173,
the Jewish apocalypse.
We have all kinds of crazy hand wringing going on. That is the mode of the Jew these days. Hand wringing about taking a giant L in Hamas. I'm sorry, in Gaza, vis-a-vis Hamas. Hello, thank you for tuning in to the free edition of the Daily Shoah on the rightstuff.biz. If you're hearing this message, it's because you're not subscribed, and we need you to change that. See, the rightstuff.biz is 100% listener-funded. We have no sponsors, we have no mega donors, we have no shadowy helicopter donors coming in and saving our ass. We need you to support us in our efforts to do these shows. So please navigate to therightstuff.biz/paywall and follow the instructions. Create an account. Create an order. We sell subscriptions monthly, quarterly, twice yearly, and yearly. It's a little bit complicated because of the rampant censorship we've had to endure. So you'll have to pay with cryptocurrency, money orders by mail, e-checks, or you can navigate to my Odyssey channel, create an account on Odyssey, and you can pay me with your credit card. Thank you, and enjoy the first half of the show. Thank you. The question is, what do they mean by this? What kind of L are they talking about? I know, Mike, you've been saying for a long time that if any living, breathing Palestinian soul in that territory is just an L for the Jews because their goal is total genocide.
I thought that what I saw was that Netanyahu had announced that they had a date set for invading the next part of Gaza.
Well, Ramadan is over now, and it's supposed to be starting now, right? Wasn't the final day of Ramadan was the other day, Al-Quds Day?
We don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
I want to just make that clear.
Oh, absolutely.
And if you listen to the show with Lewis and myself and Borzoi yesterday, we went over a lot of this stuff. However, one thing I think is sure. They probably will do something in Rafah. This is sort of the consensus that we came to. Again, we could be wrong about all of it, but this is sort of where I'm at. I don't know if they're going to invade. They're probably going to spend all those bombs that we just sent them a couple weeks ago. They're probably going to drop them all in Rafah and kill tons of people.
I would imagine so.
They're going to do some terror bombing. I don't know if they're going to do an invasion. They might do some token invasion and leave. But I think we are long past the point where the Jews are going to be kicking them in, be able to get them to flee into Egypt. Because given the amount of the Israeli army that pulled out of Gaza, which we showed the map yesterday, I actually still have it here. But, you know, we showed the map on the show yesterday. There's only a few tiny little pockets where there are still Jewish troops in Gaza Strip right now. And that means that the people can run north. And they're going to stay in Gaza. They're going to have suffered massive amounts of death and destruction, but they're going to stay in Gaza. They're going to live there. And that's an L for the Jews, just period.
Yeah, this.
The question is whether they'll let them go back to Gaza City, because they seem to have this one brigade left that's like this thin bar across, like right south of Gaza City, that seems to be there to try to block anybody fleeing from their Rafah operation from re-entering Gaza City. But they're not fleeing into Egypt. They want them to flee into Egypt. They want to set up like a 40,000 tent city in Egypt to catch these people as they fled, but that they don't seem to want to flee that way. And the Jews are really strategically in quite the bind.
Let me show you this thing. So this Thomas L. Friedman, the Thomas Friedman piece in New York Times is really long. I assume it was published this morning.
The Friedman piece.
Very. Very long and has a lot of copes, a lot of hand wringing, a lot of oh God, what have we done? A lot of how can we spin this, get a win out of this? And one of the parts is like these really elaborate. I don't know if copes is the right word, but these really elaborate, like negotiating with the cosmos for these conditions regarding a ceasefire, or like the day, like when the war is over, like what does it look like? And one of these things, I was like, he seems to have been resigned to, like, yeah, there's still going to be, the Gaza Strip is still going to be Palestinian territory. Like, we're not, they're basically taking the L. Like, I don't think there's going to be, from his perspective, he doesn't think there's going to be any Jared Kushner beachfront condos going up anytime soon. Because I'm reading this right here. For the time, if it happens, and I think he means a ceasefire and exchange for hostages. Mm-hmm. If it happens, when Israel gets out of Gaza and has its hostages back, the Biden team is already talking to Egypt about working closely with the U.S. and Israel to ensure Hamas can never again smuggle in the sorts of arms it did in the past under the Egypt-Gaza border. I almost said the Egypt-Gaza border.
Good luck.
Yeah, right. Israel could say that every ounce of food and medicine that Gazans need will be delivered, as well as the bags of cement for rebuilding from countries that might want to help. But if 1 ounce is found going to dig new attack tunnels, rebuild rocket factories, or restart rocket attacks in Israel, the borders will close. Again, let Sinwar deal with that dilemma. Go back to Hamas's old ways and starve his people, or keep the ceasefire. And yeah, basically, it's like, yeah, good luck. This is the
good
L.
Fucking luck.
This is the L. Like, yeah, no, you're not taking that territory. They're going to be back. And as they get aid and rebuild, they're going to rebuild their capabilities to keep being Hamas. Because another thing that I didn't mention in this article is like the pretense that everybody who lives in the Gaza Strip is like anti-Hamas, and they blame Hamas for their misfortune. It's like, no, they blame Israel. Fuck you.
Yeah, so. And they also get that, like, now there probably are some, right? There probably are some people that have that
I'm
view,
sure.
Or some people that are checked out or whatever. But generally speaking, after this, though, that no.
Right. But the idea that, like, yeah.
Particularly when you even have – the funniest thing is – here's what's funny. They're saying, like, okay, so – because Hamas, they're saying that the Gazans, the Palestinians in Gaza should be blaming Hamas for everything that Israel did.
Right.
But on the same token, you have Friedman saying, like, everything Israel did was, like, a mistake.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, so if you think so, if you think, and world global opinion is that Israel's response to what Hamas did was like way fucking over the top, crazy.
And you're not getting what you want
out of it. Why should the Palestinians think that?
Like, it doesn't make sense that you did this huge over the top disgusting action and you're not getting away with it, like, clean. That's what's pretty funny. Like, you've done all this death and destruction.
They're not,
like,
getting, well,
because I assume the Gaza Strip was just going to be Israeli territory after this was over. Like, that was going to be, unless there was like a massive.
Well, that's what David French was pointing out. Is like, if you just smash the place,
well, they've already smashed it. They don't seem to have the PR cover to finish the job.
Yes, yeah,
you know, that's what's going
this
on.
This is the problem,
and this, like, is what all no these what articles we have. Friedman, and then there's the Spencer Ackerman article, and then I have this crazy Hebrew language.
Spencer Ackerman,
only,
by the way, is Jewish.
I have this Hebrew language version of Haaretz article I was sent last night about this Jew. What's his name? Chaim Chaim Levinson, like, just totally blackpilled that they've lost. And his version of "we've lost" is like, we didn't, you know, we're not wiping out every soul in Gaza and taking over. Like, our genocide kind of failed, and like, this is the end of the world for him. That's pretty funny.
There's also this opinion piece. Now, this is actually this is a Hamas-related genocide trap for Israel. This is old. People resurrected this from January.
You know, there's one group of people. You can always trick into doing a genocide. For some reason, it's the Jews.
Well, yeah.
Like, can you lay a genocide trap for anybody except Jews? Like, oh, I have a chance to wipe out an entire fucking ethnicity here, just to be on the safe
this
side.
This is
all
a
right.
reaction to the the South African criminal, the court decision on genocide. But anyway. Anyway, so they basically saying, like, it kind of goes with what Rabbi Barclay was saying, like, we won't forgive Palestinians for forcing us to kill their children. And I'm like, it's a weird thing to fucking say, bro. Like, that's just a weird thing to say.
Well, he pulled that quote from somebody else, which is even funnier.
Yeah,
like, you didn't come up with that on your own, but
you
revere that quote. That's just crazy. Like, that's a thing that you, like, you've held on to.
Well,
like,
he attributed it to either Golda Meir or David Ben-Gurion.
I think it was Meyer.
Same basic thing.
Yeah. So, but it's just funny. Like, you hang on to that one. You have that one to pull out when you need it. Like, that's a quote that you live your life by.
Well, here's something I would say to people. Because, again, I just said on Twitter, like, that, yeah, ultimately, Jews are going to take an L here. And I know even there's some, like, white nationalists that are going to push back, because there's a certain trend of white nationalism is, like, Jews never take L's. I'm like, no, that's really not true. Like, people need to get out of that mode of thinking. And also, you, in order to get out of that mode of thinking in a way, not having always been a white nationalist and having been a Palestine advocate, like a kind of a left-wing Palestine advocate in my youth, you kind of get a feel for how this conflict works. You get, like, you need kind of both. Like, you need to, like, having been a left-wing Palestine advocate and now also being an anti-Semite, I feel like I've got, like, the best of both worlds to, that's like, the understand problem. The conflict, right?
Bring you up a little bit.
So it's like, it's like, so I get some of the understanding of actually how the geopolitics and the wrangling amongst parties goes, and then I also understand how the Jewish question works, and why they won't, why Jews won't give up on, like, ultimately genocide. But they have to right now, like, and it's like a combination of factors. It is a combination of public outcry around the world. It's a combination of diplomatic pressure from Russia, yep, China, and the BRICS countries. And it's a combination of military deterrence from Iran, Hezbollah, and Hamas. Have all these things working together have confounded Israel. They have thwarted them. They can't do what they want. They cannot get the people out of Gaza.
Speaking of Iran real quick, I saw one of these, like, neoliberal goons complaining that a leftist made the argument that I don't support regime change in Iran to advance women's rights because right now Iran is kind of a bulwark against Israel that's dueling a genocide.
Yeah, sure.
I'm like, yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, well, I just, like, don't support...
Let's think about this for a second.
I also don't, like, care about women's rights.
Right.
Right. But even so, say that's something you care about, right? Like, you would typically order these things in terms of your preferences, I would assume. Yeah. So women getting some more rights in Iran, the trade-off is you get that, and then there's a literal fucking genocide next door. Like, how about we do the thing that kind of prevents the genocide, and then we'll get to women's rights stuff later?
I like the tacit admission there that, like, oh, my like, ideological, my, like, bourgeois luxury beliefs, you know, for those to be sort of projected onto another nation, it has to be done by a regime that would support the genocide that's happening. It's like, do you not see the connection there? Your women's rights is the same thing as you're doing genocide. See, it's the same fucking,
it's,
shit.
Like, you would say to the libtard, like, you're almost there. Like, the key is in the lock. Just turn it. Like, yeah, right. Just turn it. Like, you're almost there, right? Like, you're almost there. Like, you've gotten so close.
You hardly even use them, right? Like, them women's rights. You don't need
them for nothing. If you got a liberal women's rights respecting regime in Iran, yes, that regime would sit back and probably materially support the genocide.
Don't ask me to do nothing!
So, you know, the fact
is, I mean, honestly, the Israel thing does create a quandary for, like, your liberals and progressives. Because it's like, so you're telling me that's the democracy, it's in the Middle East, and they support things like sex stores and gays and women's rights, but they're also doing a genocide. It almost sounds like this system that you're in favor of still has monstrous outcomes. So why would anybody?
Well, here's the problem also, though. Liberals might not make that connection directly, but Jews have been expressing frustration about this since October 7th, that their attempts to appeal this, because they've been failing on this, their attempts to appeal to the niche liberal luxury belief and demonstrate that Israel or Israel allies, like, respect that, it has worked with some. They've gotten people like Brianna Wu and people like that, like Destiny and such like that. But those are soulless. Those people are soulless hedonists, right? Like, they don't care. But a lot of leftists, it doesn't work because they have, at least in their own minds, done some kind of ranking of beliefs and priorities. And so it's this. The problem is that this is sort of something I've been milling around in my mind. It's a little bit difficult to express what I've been thinking about with this exact phenomenon, which is sort of like the sympathy for the Palestinians, the support of it comes from a deeper place. Like, because a lot of times, like, conservatives and contards will promote it like it is in and of itself a, like, libtard luxury belief. And there are times when it could easily seem to be that way, because of because not much is going on, right? Because Israel is just sort of like it's a background thing. You don't know much about it, and you're like, oh, is this another one of these poor oppressed people who I'm supposed to take their side as, like, a distraction or a piece of entertainment for myself, as like an alienated Westerner or something like that, right? But when it becomes like right in your face, like they're just killing tons of people because they hate them and they want to kick them out of their homes, they want to take over their land, the support and sympathy for the people that are being the victims of that inherently comes from a, like a deeper place than where the liberal niche luxury belief comes from, right? So it's like it really is something that's – and that's why people come to it from across spectrums. This is why I was saying when I see people that try to sort of – from whatever spectrum to like police pro-Palestine sentiments, like you should be – you can't mix Nazism – with pro-Palestine stuff, or you can't. Well, that's mostly Jews that are just trying.
You kind of have to, like, according to them, that's the only way you can do it. Like, because any pro-Palestine sentiment is called National Socialism, is called Nazism.
Well, it's also
so
like,
that's just where it is. It's anti-Semitic.
Yeah,
that's another thing. There's another thing here, which is sort of like Ben Shapiro has kind of been doing this on Twitter, where he's been and on his shows, where he's been sort of like calling out. Because a lot of times you get people who are pro-Palestine and on the left or whatever, and they'll go on shows, they'll go on the media, and they'll stay within a certain accepted boundary of discourse on this, which is you have to condemn Hamas, all this stuff, you have to condemn this, that, or the other. But Ben Shapiro is like, he's actually trying to get to like the nitty-gritty of the issue in a way, and what he's doing is he's undermining the Jewish defense shield for like being pro-Palestine but staying within the Jewish acceptable realm. He's like daring you to actually just pass the shit test. And the fact is that people that support Palestine, liberals included, don't really give a fuck about the Hamas attack on Israel. Many of them, like in their hearts, like secretly and probably privately to each other, have said what we've said openly. We just support this. This was a courageous thing done by an oppressed people against their evil oppressors, right?
Yeah, it's very easy to put a little historical because the Jewish claim that was so out of you know outrageous is like it's just by denying like history. You have to pretend that was the first day of history of this conflict. It was like that on one day for no reason at all, Hamas woke up on October 7th and said, "You know what? Fuck these people for no reason whatsoever. Dude. Let's just go kill them." And then they make up these stories and obvious lies about cutting boobies off and throwing them around, like and playing like volleyball with like dismembered tits. It's like no, it's like that's what we do in America. It's called trans surgery. It's called top surgery. Like, go fuck yourself, you know? Right. I mean...
And it doesn't work. Because what Ben Shapiro is doing is he's sort of saying, like, stop hiding
Everyone knows that those are lies.
Hamas. Stop hiding behind,
Everybody knows that shit is fake.
Don't like this or that. Just admit you like Jews getting killed. And I'm like, Ben, you don't actually want to shit test people into this.
Right.
Because once they start passing it, like, it's over. Like, because many more people are now passing the shit test. Like, I like the thing about being like us is that we just don't ever not say what we think. So we've already at the point where we've said what we think so much, there's nothing to gain by lying about what we think now, right? Yep. The time for that is long past. So, yes, I just support Hamas. Like, go ahead, call me. At least that's why they can't really come at us, because they'll just say, like, yeah. But what's funny is there was this leftist teacher. There was this video, I think it was a school teacher or something, who the Jewish media went nuts because he was talking about it in his class or something. It's a white guy. And they sent some media hit journalist to him, and he passed the shit test. The guy was like, the reporter was in his face, like, "Do you support like the killings or whatever?" He said, "Like, do you support like the raping of women?" He's like, "What's the evidence of rape?" He's like, "The raping of the women Music Festival." He's like, "What's the evidence of rape?" He's like, "Okay, oh, you don't believe the evidence of rape?" He's like, "I haven't seen the evidence." And he's like, "Do you support the killing?" And he was like, "Yeah."
Yeah, I support killing.
And I was like, holy shit, he fucking passed the shit test. He was like, he's like, you don't get to choose how they resist.
Right. Right. That's what this entire thing is always hinging on. Yeah. Like Israelis and Jews pretending that you accept the premise that they set the boundaries of resistance of the it's like, no, you don't get to do that. No one gets to do that anywhere. You know, but that's what they always.
And that's the whole goal of the Jewish Palestine movement.
That's everything that Jews do. That's the authority they assume. Yeah. They try to put everyone inside that boundary, and all you have to do is say like, no. Yeah. All you have to say no, and I'm not arguing with you. I'm not negotiating with you. The answer is no. You don't get to set. You don't get to set the parameters for my resistance or anybody else's.
Palestine's like a cosm of how Jews do it generally, right? Because like they do that everywhere. They assume the right.
I just realized
controlling every political conversation. That's the entire issue.
I just realized that the debate on the subject is like a microcosm of the conflict itself.
Wow. I realized that as I heard people debating that they were taking sides on an issue.
It has two sides. And it's like the battle. It was like the battle
debaters on each side were representing the side that they were on.
Yeah, in the fight.
It was pretty deep. Like, when I saw that, I was like, phew.
I am now the most popular podcaster on Earth.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
what is it, dickhead's
the
name?
Lex Friedman thing itself is remarkable. There's another, it's sort of funny.
I'm stuck.
The Lex Friedman thing is a funny, there's a cosm there, too. Because
cosm.
Everybody,
cosm
nobody
Kramer.
Thinks Lex Friedman is smart or interesting or deserves the place.
Hey, you're still listening to only half the content? I don't know if I could do that. And I would say to myself, man, this SvenPai guy is making good content. I love this. I can't take any more free writing. I don't know what I'm going to do. What am I going to do? I'm SvenPai's top guy. What am I going to do? Seventh Son chose me to get a subscription. Whoa, Sven needs me? Okay, I'll do it. I'm going to bat for you, Sven. I'm going to therightstuff.biz/paywall, Sven.
He has in the sort of opinion-making sphere. But everybody has, like, a different explanation for why he got there.
Yeah.
Like, some of them are saying, like, he's a privileged white male. He's a boring, privileged white male. Of course they're putting him forward. Yeah, and then some people say, like, oh, well, he's bland and he doesn't take hard stances, so he's a perfect interviewer because he just lets people say whatever they want, or he's not. And I'm like,
maximum
he's a fucking Jew.
I fucking hate now, Jews.
I think it's remarkable in how stupid he is.
Right.
Because he's legitimately a low IQ. So that could be
do I have to do this again?
Palestine debate.
I have to do this again. Like,
everybody
here's like my Lex Friedman.
He was Jewish and mentally retarded.
Like, once again, the drop is back in full force. Second time this week, or was that last week?
Most Lex Friedman I ever watched was the Destiny Finkelstein Israel Palestine debate. And I was like, I'm sorry, even Destiny, as much as I hate him, like, everybody involved in that debate, and Destiny was by far the dumbest person in the debate.
Yeah.
But everyone involved in that debate was, like, galaxy brain compared to Lex Friedman. Like, their brains were, like, even Destiny, who was, like, probably, like, midbrain, the rest of them were all very smart.
Didn't Friedman just,
like the two Jews, the Palestinian, just, were all very smart, intelligent people. Yeah.
He's, like, he recorded, like, an introduction after the fact, and he just, like, pressed record and, like, sat there slack-jawed, like, mouth agape, like, wow. Humanity is human.
It's like, yeah, is there any solution? Oh, there isn't. Let's get lunch.
Make sure you don't skip. Don't turn off your ad blocker and watch the debate.
Yeah.
This is a special day. We're supposed to say something like, Eid Mubarak. It's like the end of Ramadan.
Yeah.
Oh,
big festival day.
Mubarak.
Oh, is it today? Mubarak. I thought it was already over.
Yeah, it's like the last day of Ramadan. So now, I expect that there may be a Rafah operation, but I actually don't know if it'll come up soon because another reason the Jews pulled out of Gaza is because their army is small and not very good and it's tired. They legitimately need to rest.
They're going
to
change their diapers
if they're going to do other things.
Like, refit those diapers. That's what they got to do.
Yeah,
and they're worried about the north.
Their diapers. Yeah.
I saw this somewhere. I can't remember which one of these columns I was reading where they're lamenting like these Israeli settlers that need to return to their homes in the north. It's like, really, like, whose land did they steal, like, towards the Lebanese border that they need to get back to? It's like, no, fuck them. Don't let them ever come back
well,
to their
that's
homes.
Another,
like,
that's another problem they're having is that Hezbollah has effectively, through their campaign of just, like, shooting 5 to 10 anti-tank missiles into Israel a day.
Yeah.
And hitting random stuff and maybe killing a Jew like every couple weeks, they have displaced like 250,000 people out of their homes. Like, those people won't go. The condos up there by the Lebanon border, the Jews don't want to live there. And they're like, and again, the Jews that were living in the condos down by the Gaza border and the Jews living in the condos by the Lebanon border, they're like forming like different interest blocks and they're pressuring the Israeli government like, hey, you're gonna have to give us some kind of security guarantee to go live in our condos again in these stolen areas because, you know, it's kind of hot there and we want like X number of troops, but Israel doesn't even have that number of troops. Like, the Gaza, the southern Israel, the kibbutz people that live in the kibbutz in southern Israel, they've told the, this is what Lewis was saying yesterday. He's like, they've essentially made a demand to the Israeli government. Like, we're not going back unless you put 40,000 troops on the border with Gaza. That's a huge chunk of their fucking military.
That's a lot of troops.
So it's like, all right, well, now you're going to have to put that up on the border with Lebanon, too. And you know, you're also going to have to put all kinds of more air defense up there. Because, again, the problem with, like, David Sling and Iron Dome, like, sure, the rockets fire from Gaza that go on like a parabolic arc, go up and then down to hit. But these anti-tank missiles, they hide in the bushes on a high hillside that you can just see right at the, yep. You can see the Jewish condos. And it's like the, yep. The air defense can't take that out. That shit goes, it doesn't go up and down. It just goes straight line right down the hill into a Jewish settlement. Like they can't, there's no air defense that can do anything about that. So, yeah, so and of course, those are mobile positions. As soon as that guy shoots, he's not there anymore because he knows a drone is going to hit that place in like 2 seconds. So,
just look at some of this Friedman shit.
You can't do anything about it.
So this is my Friedman archive.piss post. What's up, Alex?
I was just looking at the title there. Israel, ceasefire, get hostages, leave Gaza, rethink everything.
Yeah.
So this is like a TED Talk?
I kind of agree that you should rethink everything.
There's another thing going on
not
in all
just
these.
In terms of Israel, just like everything.
The thing going on here is like they put a lot of emphasis on getting the hostages back. And I'm like, you don't seem to take this seriously, Israel. Like, they're a thing. Like, why should they ever give those hostages back to you after what you've done and what you're offering to just like, all right, we'll stop doing this now, sort of, maybe? Like, no, you need to put, if you want the hostages back, pull all the way the fuck out. Maybe even turn.
Yeah, they're not at this point. Like, they're not going to do.
There's no, I can't imagine. And this is probably what will happen. Like, Hamas won't give the hostages up. Because there's no concession big enough from Israel that's going to be offered to do it. And so, like, you'll have the Western diplomatic community sprouting out again that, here, you know, here's Hamas, here's Palestine not willing to play ball and negotiate again or going back. It's not, fuck that. It's Israel. Israel's not willing to do, like, Israel is a fucking invader. Israel is a cancer. Israel is not an apartheid state. It's a genocide state. And, well, oh, my God, what happened to McNabb's face?
Whoa.
He's like okay, he's back now. So it's like, yeah, there's like, there's, and what seems to be on offer is like, we want to closely monitor like what's coming into the country to like rebuild the place we destroyed. And it's going to be, it's going to be heavily conditional on whether or not we think you're like rearming yourselves. If you start showing evidence of rearming yourselves to defend yourself against us, then we're, you know, then the deal's off, the ceasefire's like, basically they're trying to negotiate for a really extremely on purpose, tenuous ceasefire, in which case I'm just like, no hostages for you, no ceasefire. You want the hostages back, you surrender. That's typically when you get POWs back, when the fucking conflict is over. Yeah. And the conflict is not over with a ceasefire. A ceasefire is a tense situation.
What Friedman is talking about in this article, because I've now skimmed most of it, is not anything actually on offer. What it is preparing opinion. Yes. For the fact that Hamas has not lost.
Right. He is.
For the fact that Hamas has.
He's trying
has
to talk people down.
Won by surviving, they have won. Remember, when you are a rebel force like that, like you, when you are like the by far weaker party and a rebel force, surviving is winning. For the Palestinians, surviving is winning because the goal is to kill them all. And even the secondary goal of not killing every Palestinian was to wipe out Hamas, and they can't do it. And so he is essentially prepping opinion for that. So he's even saying, and he even says in the middle of the comment, Friedman, you mean you would let a militarily, and he puts this militarily decimated Hamas. I don't know if that's true. Militarily decimated Hamas and its murderous leader, Yahya Sinwar, govern Gaza. Again, he says yes for the near term, and then he gives a bunch of copes. But, like, the point is you can't actually make that not happen. And he tries to say, like, we can set it up such that, like, the Palestinians will blame Sinwar and Hamas for any problems that they have.
But what's the near term? Like, what does that imply? Like, for, like, a week, for a month, for a year? And then what happens when this near term is up? You've had enough of Sinwar. Like, would we start bombing again? Like, what are you going to do, Israel? Like, what's the next step? Like, what are you even trying to say here? It's like, I don't think
his suggestion is that his suggestion is Palestinians will overthrow him. But every time Thomas Friedman is zero for like a million on predictions, like the peoples of X regime being targeted by Zionist America will like rise up. Like the number of times this nigga predicted that the fucking people of Iran will overthrow the mullahs. Like if you could like if you had a dollar for each time, you'd have like several hundred dollars. And he also did the same thing with like Serbia, and except in Serbia, he was doing the bit. Remember, like going back to 1999, And I read this in one of my speeches for NJP, Thomas Friedman's famous like column about like, if the Serbs don't rise up and overthrow Milosevic, we will bomb them to the Stone Age. Like, he basically said this. He's like, we can hit. He's like, we have the capabilities to hit every piece of vital infrastructure in the country. We can hit power plants, telephone lines, everything. We can bring you back to the fucking Dark Ages until you rise up and overthrow Milosevic and institute like democratic governance in Serbia. And it's like, people, even then, people were like, bro, like, that's that's not really democracy. Did you get that that's not really?
We're getting back to my favorite topic at the moment. Because I saw this guy, Ben Gross. I guess he's some sort of like gross little Jew.
He had this gross Jew.
It's about China. And he's like, if China was a liberal democracy, I'd be all about it, to be honest. That's all it would take to get me on their side. And I doubt I'm the only Westerner. Just get some democracy, a liberal constitution, civil society going. If they considered this.
That's gross.
I would say to the Jew, like, first of all, see, this is the thing with Jews. It's like most like white people in America, and I would assume non-white people in America, really don't actually give any fucks about governance in China. Okay, like if you really want to drill down, and that's why I find myself highly suspicious when there's somebody that really does, and I'm like, are you a Jew or you work for a Jewish foreign policy think tank? Because you as a Jew.
Are you Steve Bannon?
See, Jews feel like they have a right to tell everyone how to run all their shit. That's actually not how most white people think, really. Like, now, white people be propagandized into dumb shit, but the baseline, basic feeling of the average white guy, you know, do you care about like governance in China? I don't give a fuck. They actually get mad at you for asking. But like, but it's also like, let's not pretend like what you mean, because when you Jews say civil society, what you mean is Jewish NGOs.
Yeah,
right.
Like that's not even a disguise. That's not even a disguise.
The existential question is like, well, let's talk about outcomes here. Like, what are these wonderful outcomes that are like a Western style liberal democracy? It looks like what actually happens is you've got countries like America that bully the entire planet, help another country do an ethnic cleansing and make allies with like fucking theocratic medieval monarchies. Like,
right. No.
What use is this system in terms of actual outcomes? How is this a better planet to have these Western style liberal democracies? What makes them so fucking great?
Well, they support Israel. And that's it. Apparently, like, from the Jewish perspective.
Yeah.
It's like a not so hidden thing. I mean, I don't know how much they talk about this amongst themselves directly. I would assume quite a bit. But yeah, ultimately, that a China that did that, as we've said, like regimes that respect women's rights support genocide. Like,
right?
So, we got to be able to do like a Rage Against the Machine bit with this. Like, some of those who
see this is like my response,
I don't know,
to that kind of argumentation. This is a great clip from one of my favorite movies. Anyhow,
oh, okay. Sure. Hang on,
let's watch the clip.
Yeah, this is a good clip. This is Chigurd, whatever the fuck his name is. Young Chigurd.
If the rule you followed brought you to this, of what use was the rule?
Oh, very good.
If the rule you followed brought you to this, what use was the rule?
I'm just going to Anton Chigurd.
What good is liberal democracy if you find yourself giving hellfire missiles to Israelis?
But see, as like a deontological guy, sometimes I enforce rules. Sometimes I enforce like bad outcome rules out by the pool. It's very kind of deontological. The rule itself is the outcome that I want.
Deontology of the living dead. This comes after Night of the Living Dead. You have the deontology. Sorry, I don't know. Sorry about
the deontology of the dead. Very good. Okay, that's
the living dead.
The walking deontologist.
The outcome is liberal democracy. That's the point.
Well, again, like that's why, you know, Jews like to promote like pseudo philosophical systems like objectivism or things like that, where they like rules themselves are the end, because they don't want goyim focusing on ends. They want them focusing on
rules. Yeah, mind trap.
I have another quote.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to give you some more of Alex McNabb premium content here. One of my absolute favorite Guy Debord quotes. Movies. Such a perfect democracy constructs its own inconceivable foe, terrorism. Its wish is to be judged by its enemies rather than by its results. Story of terrorism is written by the state and is therefore highly instructive. Spectators must certainly never know everything about terrorism, but they must always know enough to convince them that, compared with terrorism, everything else must be acceptable, or in any case, more rational and democratic. Like, if we do terrorism and we're a liberal democracy, that's better than when they do it.
Well, there's even some, is even more sort of, like, that's actually very good. I like that a lot. I totally agree with that quotation, but there's more you can even dig into, like, terrorism, and they operate on this, like, and this sort of goes into the whole way we were talking about how Jews control conversations, how they control dialectics. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it used to be when I was a leftist and I would read, you'd read some of this weird turgid Marxist stuff and they would talk about like dialectic is like the key to power. And I had no idea what that meant. I didn't understand it in the slide. And I couldn't actually get Marxist intellectuals to explain it. That was another thing. I was like, what the fuck does this mean? I now like really understand it. And it's Marxist
what it means
thing.
Now. What it means is Republicans, Democrats have a slap fight and then Hellfire missiles get shipped to Israel.
Right. Exactly. And so, but that's one cosm of it. There's many cosms of how the dialectic works. So like, so
cosmos,
like the Jewish, and we discussed this yesterday, how sort of like, and what Ben Shapiro is doing, what he's trying to like, he's calling people, he's like calling out people that are adhering to dialectical rules as like, you don't really believe in those. And like, it's sort of true that like when you advocate for Palestine, you're not particularly offended by October 7th. And yes, you understand that Hamas is anti-Semitic and you don't really care, but you're sticking to your human rights, this, that, like approved talking points that were set out long ago of how you're supposed to discuss Palestine, which Jews are going to try and now shift that. They want to shift the approved talking points of how you're supposed to discuss it, but the problem is you're dealing with a deeper feeling of why people actually support it. But Jews always assume the right to control both sides and set the parameters, and like the terrorism is the worst evil, absolutely a parameter of discussion that you must accept to participate in discussion. Hamas, remember at the very beginning of this, they were, every conversation started, do you unequivocally condemn Hamas, right? Like this was how every interview and every topic on the news started, or like it would be if they were dealing with people who are sort of already in control having a fake debate.
Yeah,
both sides would start anything they said by saying that. But if you then had things like, you know, you had like Piers Morgan had that faggot like Owen Jones on his show, and he asks him like, do you unequivocally do it? He also had some guy that was a representative of the Palestinian Authority who was some like Palestinian with like a British accent on. And that guy didn't do it. He said, like, I'm not going to start out by doing that. And he called out, like, how that works. And Piers Morgan was, like, slack-jawed. He couldn't believe that somebody would do that. So that's, like, where the power and the control comes from. And the mm-hmm. threat is then, like, you get people like Destiny out here, like, oh, you guys, like, you break the dialectical rules.
Right.
What does that get you?
Because dialectical rules are a means of control by Israel. It's like that is the greatest expression of how this foreign country has control over the entire West, all of its media, because this litmus test, that test, like, is everywhere. Everywhere this is discussed, you are not allowed to take the other side in this discussion.
Yeah.
In the microcosm of, you're not allowed to. You can't say, like, well,
you're
I don't
have to take the side. You're not allowed to say, like, you know.
You're not allowed to say, like, you know, like, what, I want Palestine to win this war because I think Israeli rule is unjust. You're not allowed to hold that opinion. Like, how many fucking, I mean, there's conflicts all around the world where no one really gives a shit. If, you know, what was going on in Myanmar? Is that what Tim Poop was like? What about Burma? Like, I don't know.
Okay,
like,
well, that's legitimately none of my fucking business.
Right. But it's but with this one, like, if you're saying, like, I don't like what Israel does. I don't like the way they rule. I don't like the way their country was established. I don't know what they've done to the people that live there. I think the people that live there, the Palestinians, whether or not they call themselves Palestinians 100 years ago, well, you know what? They were dealt with by the Brits and they were lied to and they were misrepresented and now they're dealing with, you know,
don't
like
care about those things. Again,
like
those
people
are like
those people have been wronged. Yeah. But but you're not allowed to be like, I believe these people have been wronged the whole time through and justice is getting rid of Israel and letting them just have their land back so they can live in peace. That's justice.
Right.
You're not allowed to say that. Right. Like, it's insane that if you can't, if you want to say, like, do you unequivocally condemn the military fighting force that has taken up the cause for these people? Like, that's where you have to start the conversation. Fuck you. Fuck you. I condemn the IDF.
That's right, because they fight, right?
I condemn Israel.
Is terrorism.
And yeah, it's like if you have a special word for condemning Israel, anti-Semitism, well, it seems like you want to handicap this discussion here. You want to have a special form of like ethnic whatever, like racism, to like apply just to this country. Fuck you. Now I'm going to go with that because there's a weakness there. There's something you're telling me by having that. That rule in place serves a certain purpose, which means you're trying to end anybody's ability to objectively look at the conflict. And also, yes, I am anti-Semitic, so I don't care. Even if the Jews were in the right, I would still want the wall destroyed. But that's because they're wrong.
But they're not, though. That's
no,
why
of course
I'm
they're
anti-Semitic,
not.
Because they're never right
they're
in
never
these
right.
situations.
They're always evil.
And so, yes, that's sort of the thing is like these – and once an anti-Semit – really the onrush of anti-Semitism – is really like more people breaking these rules.
Yeah.
Right. More people like breaking their dialectic frame. And more people are breaking this dialectic frame now than I have ever seen before in my entire in my entire life. I've never seen so many people passing the shit test.
Yep.
And the one thing I guess that they get nervous about right wingers is that left wingers are like more effective. This is maybe a bit too much, but we'll see. Left wingers are like more effective in their advocacy and their activism and their actually stick-to-itiveness and their willingness to go out
there
and do it on the ground stuff and help. Right wingers are better at passing their shit tests, though. You know what I mean? Because in a way, it's like very much of the right exists in an intellectual only space or pseudo or whatever you want to call it. Because
there's no infrastructure for like. Hello, thank you for tuning in to the free edition of the Daily Shoah on the rightstuff.biz. If you're hearing this message, it's because you're not subscribed, and we need you to change that. See, the rightstuff.biz is 100% listener-funded. We have no sponsors, we have no mega donors, we have no shadowy helicopter donors coming in and saving our ass. We need you to support us in our efforts to do these shows. So please navigate to therightstuff.biz/paywall and follow the instructions, create an account, create an order. We sell subscriptions monthly, quarterly, twice yearly, and yearly. It's a little bit complicated because of the rampant censorship we've had to endure, so you'll have to pay with cryptocurrency, money orders by mail, e-checks, or you can navigate to my Odyssey channel, create an account on Odyssey, and you can pay me with your credit card. Thank you, and enjoy the first half of the show. Thank you. Right-wing advocacy. There's not an alphabet soup of groups you can go join, and the ones that do exist, they're just there to tie up money and tie up your time. Like, what are you going to go to the Heritage Foundation and get the fuck out of here?
And the other thing that what Spencer Ackerman was saying, who is a Jew and like is some kind of like leftist Jew.
I have that
Jew,
one here too.
He was bitching that the America, its soft power rule elsewhere in the globe is basically trash now.
Yeah.
Like no one takes it seriously. Because
where's America's rules-based order now? Is that what was just
it's a good article. It's actually but he's also pointing to like again, it's not merely dialectical or theoretical. He's saying like people who work for U.S. agencies that deal with other parts of the world and use this sort of vaguely human rights liberal world rules-based order crap to try and enforce America's political will or get political outcomes that America wants can't do it because people just are like fuck you.
It's good,
like everywhere, the aid workers and stuff and other agencies and State Department people going around the world trying to get outcomes in various regions, like the people there are like, oh, human rights from you? Fuck off. Like, it's just failing. Like, it just, you know, because the human rights shit was always just a Jewish soft power technique, right? And the reason
was like a Hillary Clinton fucking thing is like human rights and also let's fucking destroy China.
Yeah.
Well, but that's the thing that's been like the default U.S. soft power foreign policy, and yes, there was always like a nuclear bomb behind it, right? But it's like he's making the point that like the human
rights,
you can't
be oppressed if you're dead.
The human rights vaguely liberal international order where effectively U.S. power sets the standard around the world that like basically kind of like this soft liberalism is the standard to be set. And those that transgress that, those that go against that can be targeted. And as long as the U.S. maintains some consistency in this, then that seems legitimate. But this massive gaping inconsistent hole in Israel-Palestine kind of reveals the whole thing for just a power game, and that, which again, you got to understand, like, we're political radicals and we deal on like the far fringes of actual political discussion, and we are deeply, deeply cynical about the stated motives of high level actors in politics. All of us are, right? And people on the far left are as well. That's not really what most people are like. Even if there's sort of this vague understanding, this kind of bullshit, most people just go along with it. This makes that very fucking hard. So, like, we could always say, oh, yeah, but the liberal fucking – that was always just this fucking soft power bullshit. Like, in the end, there's always a sword, a knife, or a bomb behind it. We know that. But, again, we're out here just, like, yelling in the wilderness on the fringes. Like, these fucking people are all liars. Mm-hmm. Radicals always do that. But it's also – radicals are always right about that. Mm-hmm. But now it becomes clear. It becomes obvious. It's, like, tangible. Like, you can't hide it. And so in a lot of this bullshit diplomacy stuff in the international arena – it's just hiding. It's literally like Stephen Molyneux would go crazy. It's literally hiding the gun.
Let's read a little Ackerman here. He puts this point together. The concept operates international rules-based order. The concept operates as an asterisk placed on international law by the dominant global superpower. It makes the United States one of the reasons international law remains weak, since rules-based order that exempts the United States and its allies fundamentally undermines the concept of international law.
It's one ally. It's ally. It's one.
Yeah, well, presumably they're talking about like Europe and NATO. America, because he's also roping like Russia, Ukraine into this too. American policymakers tend to invoke the concept to demonstrate the benefits of U.S. global leadership. It sounds on the surface a lot like international law, a stable global order involving the panoply of international aid and financial institutions in which the rules of acceptable behavior reflect liberal values. And when U.S. prerogatives coincide with the international law, the United States describes the two synonymously. On the eve of Russia's illegal 2022 invasion of Ukraine, Secretary of State Antony Blinken warned of a moment of peril for the foundation of the United Nations Charter and the rules-based international order that preserves stability worldwide. But when the U.S. prerogatives diverge from international law, America has no problem violating it, all while declaring its violations to ultimately benefit global stability. The indelible example is the 2003 U.S. invasion of Iraq, which George W. Bush administration cynically justified as a means of enforcing UN disarmament mandates. So,
which also was an absolute wrecking ball to stability. Like that was a major, major destabilizing event that the Middle East has not and will not recover from for decades. Like, they shattered what was a state, what they were actually, if you were to sit in their backroom deals on that, they shattered stability because the Jews didn't like the current – like, it was a shaky stability that existed, but it was nonetheless far more stable than what we have today. And Iraq was a far more stable country than what we have today. The Jews just didn't like that stability. They wanted a different – they wanted different stability or instability. And they really just wanted instability.
The international law is unambiguously against what Israel is doing in Gaza. 2 months before the resolution number 2728, the International Court of Justice ruled that the continuing Israeli campaign could plausibly be considered genocidal and ordered Israel to take measures to prevent genocide from unfolding. Ahead of 2728's passage, the Canadian Parliament approved a motion, however porous, to stop new arms transfers to Israel. And the day the Security Council approved the resolution, the UN Special Rapporteur for the Occupied Palestinian Territories, Francesca Albanese recommended the member states should immediately embargo weapons shipments to Israel, since Israel appears to have failed to comply with the binding measures ordered by the international court. But it passed. The White House now security spokesman, our best buddy, Kirbysher, John Kirby, clarified.
The curb talk.
He gave his curb talk. The U.S. weapon sales and transfers to Israel would be unaffected. To the astonishment of Senate Democrats.
I'm going to have to just put a question mark behind that one. But, like, there might be some – well, they might – see, you could – the thing is, feigning astonishment would be a good political tactic in this situation. If you were very much –
I'm doing it right now.
If you were on the other side, right, if you were genuinely in Congress as a genuinely pro-Palestine person, you could get up there and pontificate about international law and rules and, like, this resolution has passed and we are in violation, and you could do all of this rhetorical stuff and all these flourishes, and they wouldn't really be able to say anything because literally the cope that they came up with was that resolution was non-binding.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it wasn't. It was not.
That was not a non. That was a Security Council resolution that I don't, said but I, we but I, demand.
But, I don't, but are we bound by it? I don't feel bound.
That is not non-binding.
But we're still doing it, so I don't think it's binding. I don't feel bound. In fact, I'm very, very much unbound.
By the rules, though, it is binding.
But what are the rules? The rules aren't stopping me, though. I'm America. I'm still doing this. It's unaffected.
Right. Yeah. So if your rule, like, what use is your rule? Right.
Right.
Yeah. Right. I was listening to a Robert Morris thing the other day, and he was talking about some trade arrangement that America had made, I guess, during the Trump administration, and they got pissed because some country was trying to haul them into court for arbitration over it, and like, no, you can't do that.
Right. But I would say
don't understand how these trade agreements work. No, we get whatever we want. You can't use any kind of process to hold us accountable for anything.
Right. But here's what I would say, though. Here's one thing I'll say, though, is that in politics, nothing is like that simple.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at the – when you say, like, okay, so they're flouting it, right? Like, then you could just say, like, well – like, throw the UN in the trash then, right? Because it's pointless. What's the point? It doesn't matter.
No, throw the United States in the trash.
No, I think it does matter.
It matters very much.
I think the fact that that this resolution was passed, that they couldn't veto it for whatever political diplomatic reason, but now they're just flouting it and they have to pretend like it's non-binding. It's like they could go out there and say – well, the UN is trash and we just don't listen to it, but they don't. What's stopping them? Even though they are effectively treating it like that. So in the rule, also in the breaking of it, now becomes a political weapon in the hands of those opposing like America and Israel, right? So like and it also now it very much does have other downstream effects. Like Russia is going to be like, oh yeah, but why the fuck should we? Why the fuck should we care about any of that stuff? You don't, you know. And in Russia, like, they can just create outcomes. And if America wants to stop outcomes, they have to do like a. Well, they can only do it like kinetically, right? They have to like go in physically to stop them, or Russia will just do certain shit that they want. So
you've got these UN resolutions. I mean, it does sort of represent like the popular will of the planet.
Yeah, well, it represents some kind of consensus amongst. People who have political power around the world, right? And so that the fact that you even got France and Britain voting for – now, you could also say, well, France and Britain voted for said resolution because they did. They voted for it. They didn't abstain. They didn't veto. Like those are permanent Security Council members, and they voted for that resolution. So you could say, well, okay, they also did it. Well, why did they do it? Well, you could say, oh, that's domestic political concerns. I'm like, okay. Well, then that means that that's something real. That means that the demonstrations every weekend in London of people pouring out into the streets to demonstrate for Palestine every weekend in London, that's having some kind of an effect. The same kind of stuff happening in France. It's having an effect. The public opinion of people in those countries, whether they're Muslim or immigrant or whatever, it does matter. Like, these things have an effect. So
yeah,
I think
oftentimes
people get – like, they see – the powerful acting how they want anyway, despite some of these efforts to restrain or things like that. And they get like, oh, they're just going to do what they want anyway. It's like, yeah, but it always comes at a cost. Like this is always a balancing act. There's always, it's always like really like a chess game or some other kind of game. And they give something up to get something. And the trade-off is they are sacrificing legitimacy for raw power. And the more you do that, like, every time you do that, you lose – like, soft power is easier than hard power. And every time you give one up for the other, like,
and
you're ultimately hastening your end as a ruling body. So.
And part of the cost for all this is how all these Jewish commentators are sort of, like, defining down the outcome. They're sort of, like, preparing Zionists
That's
for this soft landing of failure. And it says right here, and it reflected – Ackerman notices here. He writes, the reality is that Washington is now arming a combatant – that the UN Security Council has ordered to stop fighting, an uncomfortable position that helps explain why the United States insists that the ruling is the thing isn't binding. And that reality isn't lost on the rest of the world. The slaughter in Gaza has disinclined foreign officials and groups to listen to U.S. officials about other issues. And El Shalina State Department human rights officer who recently resigned over Gaza told Washington Post that some activist groups in North Africa simply stopped meeting with her and her colleagues. Trying to advocate for human rights just became impossible. While the U.S. aids Israel, she said.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
And I feel really bad for those Africans.
here comes like the sort of the crux of the thing. And for people out of power, they often imagine that for those in power, these kinds of protestations from like less powerful people or like something at the UN, like you'll get like say like a Nietzschean type of right winger who would love the idea of like scoffing at the UN and just like shitting on it, right? Like that's right? They, because that sort of fulfills some kind of like powerless Nietzschean, like impotent fantasy of a right winger imagining how they would behave in power. Like we would just shit on this, whatever. And this is sort of so part of the conflict between, if for lack of a better term, like optics kikes and jignats, is that jignats are morons. They're like, let's just use hard power now, do it as much as we can, fuck all of this liberal, good feeling, soft power shit. Whereas Jews like Friedman and others who advised Israel to take a different path after October 7th, where they were – this is also where they talk about like international coalition building. Like you remember in the W years when they were talking about – Democrats are like, let's build the international coalition, get the approval of UN, get the approval of this, get our allies on board, get this, that. And you would even see politicians – because they, you know, and sometimes you get like Republicans would come back at like liberal politicians that would come out and say this on TV, and they'd be like, "You're just actually against the war, like, you just don't want right. us to do it, and you're saying these other things like as an excuse of what to say." And I actually believe that at one point. I'm like, "No, on some level, I think some of these liberals were legitimately saying, no, we need to do this in a way where we retain legitimacy with these institutions."
Yeah,
because ultimately, like what George W. Bush did, lost American prestige and credibility. Like it did. And that ultimately, again, the other thing is these things aren't immediate. They don't happen in the immediate sense. Like these things are years and decades in the build up to ultimate results. But in the end, you could draw a line from that loss of U.S. legitimacy to the loss of Israel's legitimacy now and to the fact that they cannot accomplish their goal in Gaza. The fact they have ultimately been hit in the face with some hard deterrence. And that comes in the form of an alliance of Russia, China, and Iran, where Iran now has a perfect diplomatic reason to shoot missiles at Israel that is totally acceptable under all international norms. UN aside, their territory on a foreign country, their embassy in a foreign country was hit. So two countries were hit.
No. We had
also
to build it next
the norm
door.
Of not blowing up embassies was broken. And so the Iranians have every reason to shoot cruise missiles directly into the heart of Israel.
I love the excuse for
and
that.
And nobody could argue with their right to do it.
Of course
Even
you
America
can.
Can't argue with their right to do it.
Of course you can. Come on. We got a bag full of excuses here. We didn't hit the embassy. We hit the building next door. We hit next door. They were
That's
and,
only
they were,
propaganda that is
And it's
that
like they're planning.
American,
I know, but
though.
Like they're planning military yeah. stuff in that building. It's like, so? Our country's not allowed to plan military stuff?
Yeah, they're allowed to do that.
Like, are they not allowed to do that? Like, you're just allowed to, if you, like, no, that's not how the world works. But I guess under...
If Syria and Iran are allies, they're allowed to plan a
they're
military
allowed to plan
operation
things.
In a diplomatic building.
And like, we didn't hit the embassy, we hit next door. Like that, no, fuck yeah. you.
Like, you like a military door?
A military door.
Yeah. And then no, they're like, saying it's like an annex. An annex.
Oh,
I mean,
it's an annex.
Next door they used to plan wars against Israel. I'm like, no.
So you hit Syrian soil.
No, you didn't.
Okay, so can Syria... I mean, basically, everybody can hit you back now, right? So I've got this.
I have to be honest with you. I never had a problem with Jews until I met you. And
yeah.
And I was like, now I get it.
What is that from?
It's just like that's Bill Burr and John Lovitz going back and forth roasting each other. I just thought it was fun.
Funny. That's good, but that's just a good quote.
Yeah, it's good. I never had a problem with Jews.
But it's funny because John Lovitz is one of the least offensive Jews. He's just an annoying, irritating
John,
fat guy.
John Lovitz is completely unobtrusive. I can't remember ever having a problem with John Lovitz.
Well, he played characters you had a problem with, like the annoying man, but that was just funny. Yeah. Well, or the annoying man is like,
well, I think he's probably a super Zionist because he does this.
One of my favorite people in this business because this is all we do, is we just give each other shit. Yeah. And I have been having a field day with, you know, the Gaza.
You've never done it in
Gaza
person, though.
Strip.
It's always on
the Gaza. I've been having a field day texting you
Annoying things
about the Gaza Strip.
Well, let's just call this episode The Jew and the Nazi. Let's just get down to it. We do it in text. We've never done it face to face.
I'm just presenting.
And I told you I'm bringing my howitzer.
Oh, God.
Boom. Go ahead.
No,
that's a German net word.
Right.
Well, you appropriated it.
Well, he's referring,
the fact is that, like,
he's referring
John
to his
Lovitz
bands. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I understand that.
They get off that subject right
but
away.
Even your bands, you have to name after a German cannon.
Right.
Anyway, but like the thing is, John Lovitz, you can't really win that argument, though, John. Like, you're going to have a tough time. But that's funny that Bill Burr ended up saying, I never had a problem with Jew until you said. Because the funny thing is, it's like.
Yeah, but it's a work. Sure they're like best Bill buddies. Burr, all he does is talk about how much he loves him. Like, it's all just.
Oh, no, I know that. Yeah. But I'm saying Bill Burr is saying that. Like, yeah. That's hidden. Behind like deep layers and layers upon layers of sarcasm and irony, and it's obviously meant to be a joke, and it probably is a joke from his perspective. He probably still thinks he loves Jews or whatever, but I'm like, see, every Jew is like secretly like those, like that those words probably sort of struck some secret terror, because it's sort of true. It's like, you know, I never had a problem with Jews until, like, Jews never want to hear that word, hear those words, because it's like, oh God, what, like, there's always a breaking point, right?
Yeah.
But I'm obviously, Bill Burr is joking, and the thing is, it's like, Bill Burr is like, see, here's the thing, I might think that what Jews are doing in Gaza is bad, but I'm not willing to give up my cushy career and all my money and my fame and prestige for that, so, because he knows very well that he
my
could.
My nigger wife.
See, by getting a nigger wife, I think he gave himself lots of leeway, maybe, I don't know.
It's so hard.
But whatever.
What else should we read
The
here?
Thing that annoys me about people like Bill Burr is that it's like, I don't know, like, I guess it's sort of like people always say when people get in these positions where they could, in theory, like, say, fuck you, they kind of like don't. Like, well, probably because people that really want to say fuck you to the system never, by the time they get, like, they get filtered out before they could even get there.
Well,
you know,
enough about
like,
Bill
they'll transgress before they're big enough to just say fuck you. So
I want to get back to Thomas L. Friedman and his, like, squirming. Like, the squirming, the. You know, trying to have the matzo and eat it too, that these people do with this thing. Where was it?
I'm not going to get the matzo. I'm not going to get the matzo.
I understood that many Israelis felt they had a moral and strategic right. Now, this is Friedman. We were reading Ackerman a minute ago. This is back to Thomas Friedman. Moral and strategic right and necessity to go into Gaza and remove Hamas once and for all. I don't know who that quote is being attributed to, but that's in quotes. In which case, I argued Israel will need three things: time, legitimacy, and military. And other resources.
See,
from
legitimacy.
The US.
See, that's very important.
Right. Yep. The ambitious goal of wiping out Hamas could not be completed quickly, if at all. The military operation would end up killing innocent civilians, given how Hamas had tunneled under them. Again, the human shields thing. And it would leave. I mean, again, you've got this tiny piece of. Sven needs me to sign up for a paywall subscription at therightstuff.biz/paywall. Okay, Sven. I'm your number one guy. I'll do it. Property that they have. Where are they supposed to be? It's not their fault that you are a bloodthirsty, disgusting race that has no problem. You know you have to pretend in the pages of the New York Times to be sort of like, to wring your hands over civilian casualties. But in reality, you do not give a fuck. You mow down hospitals and fucking universities at every chance you get. And then you come up with your crappy excuse. You blow up, Red Crescent vans. Ambulances and say, oh, there was Hamas fighters. There was a Hamas. It's a command and control van. Like, no, it's a hospital.
Well, the funny thing
or
is,
that was an ambulance. And then, as we all know, you blow up. You're stupid enough to blow up a celebrity chef's fucking aid workers in front of everyone.
That was legitimately dumb. Because arguably, like, that World Food Kitchen, it really wasn't that important to the overall aid effort. That could have almost even been used by Israel for, like, propaganda.
Yeah.
Like, look.
Look what we did.
We're working with this celebrity chef to help bring food to Gazans. Like, and I will bet you that one of the reasons that people got very angry about that was because there were probably even some optics Jews who were hoping to use it that way. Because Jose Andres was a total fucking cuck talking about how deeply affected he was by the Hamas attack and all this shit beforehand. So, like. And apparently some of these dumbass right wing Jews even made fun of the fact that some of the staff for Jose Andres's like World Celebrity Kitchen were like staying in an expensive hotel in Tel Aviv before going into Gaza, like on a mission that was actually approved by the IDF to go in. They totally could have used it. Jews could have used that mission for their own propaganda. See, we're not monsters. See, look at this celebrity chef. And they put that in front of Americans' TV screens. And it might have fucking worked. But these dumbass fucking kikes running the fucking show, these stupid yids, bombed them and killed them. Like, that was a fucking idiotic blunder.
So he
says that was very stupid.
It would leave a security and government vacuum in Gaza that would have to be filled by the non-Hamas Palestinian Authority in the West Bank, which is fun, right? We want to put this puppet fucking...
We already have this, regime. Like, a reliable puppet regime here, yeah.
But they would have to be upgraded and transformed to take on the task.
I love the smugness of this fucking Jew, like this sort of blithe assumption that we can just, change these little things and just again, tweak it here and there, like, you know.
Because it lays on the false premise once again that, like, they got people in Gaza, don't like Hamas.
Yeah, which is but just also lies absurd. On the premise that Jews fundamentally have a right to tweak and control all these governing structures to to suit their purposes.
Yes,
you know?
But the premise that casus belli of being allowed to do that is trying to imply that Gazans don't like being used as human shields. They don't like being tunneled under. They don't like being killed. So they would love to have a different. They would love to have the Palestinian the PA over there to allow. I guess what you bring the PA into Gaza, then just. Slowly, like block by block, Israelis just take all that real estate. That's kind of how the Palestinian Authority works, right?
I mean, because if you create a situation where you have the cuck Palestinian Authority take over Gaza as the governing body, remember Israel arms the Palestinian Authority. Now they don't arm them with anything other than rifles, but they do arm them with those. That's why they use M16s. That's what Lewis was telling us, that they use M16s or M4s or whatever. Palestinian Authority does, because they get armed fundamentally by America to do this. And of course, what's so funny about this whole thing, there's sort of a funnier narrative here generally about, like, you know, when Thomas Friedman talks about legitimacy and the importance of that, I think if there's one sort of salient thing, this is probably theory selling here. If there's one sort of salient thing that you could really say is sort of a difference between right and left in terms of attitude and understanding of politics, is that right-wingers fundamentally don't really understand the idea of the importance of legitimacy. Mm-hmm. Like, they kind of don't. And that's also why you get people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and others that are like dumbass Zio shills that go out there and they say that when Biden gives $250 million to fund the Palestinian Authority, that he's like funding terrorism. Because they fundamentally don't understand how this works. Like, they're just stupid, and they don't get it. Like, yes, Biden, there are earmarks in congressional bills to give money to the Palestinian Authority, and when legitimately stupid, retarded conservatives come across that, oh, but Palestinians terrorist! It's like, do you understand how a puppet regime fucking works? Like, you know, it's like they don't understand it. And do you understand that Israel needs the legitimacy of the Palestinian Authority as a puppet with fake legitimacy that they can point to and say, we're legitimate, we negotiate with the other side. Look, there's the Palestinian Authority. We deal with them. See, look at how legitimate all of this is. You know, that's what it's there for. And like that's a dumbass Likudnik thing, because they don't get that from nowhere. They're getting that from the retarded Likudnik Jews that are giving them money and are telling them what talking points they're supposed to have. So these stupid, idiotic Likudnik kikes are sacrificing all the political machinations, all the soft power, all the legitimacy for their sort of very fast, rapid scale genocide they want to do. And it's like, you fucking idiots. I'm glad you fucking morons are in power, because hopefully someday we can defeat you. It gives me hope. If the Jews become rightoids, we absolutely can beat them.
Hmm. That's true.
I desperately want the Jews to become rightoids.
Right,
that
rightoids
would be
extremely to beat.
Yeah, because then they lose. The rightoids lose. So the best phenomena in the world is like the balance of rightoidism shifting in favor of rightoids amongst the Jewish community. That is like one of the best phenomena. That's what gives me hope for the future. Jews are rapidly becoming right-wing morons, and I love it.
They opted for the worst.
They're going to kill possibly millions of people in the process, but it might just signal an end to their rule.
They opted for the worst strategic combination. Militarily, they opted for the Dresden approach, which, though it may have ended up killing some Sorry, let me try that again. Militarily, they opted for the Dresden approach, which, though it may have ended up killing some 13,000 Hamas fighters, also killed thousands of Palestinian civilians, leaving hundreds of thousands of others injured, displaced, or homeless, and delegitimizing for many around the world what Israel thought was a just war. Well, they thought wrong. There's no just war that Israel prosecutes against these people.
Yeah.
It's only America that sort of gives them that. It's like America's projection of power and its rules-based order that gives them like the veil, like a facade of legitimacy. It's like your legitimacy completely comes from the fact that there will be carrier groups in the Mediterranean to back you up.
There was an optical way that Israel could have responded to October 7th, but it would have the tribal bloodlust Jewish desire for like revenge and just taking like right. pounds of flesh out of Palestinians wouldn't have been satisfied.
You mean just like in the fake and gay diplomatic community there could have been?
Well, yes, that's what I'm saying. Like the legitimacy maintaining response could have been done. I don't think that would have worked. And that's the problem. That's sort of the problem they're up against is like, but there was this, but that also in the immediate aftermath of the Jewish like feelings of just having been hit and hit hard and actually being vulnerable, like there was no chance that they weren't going to extract the blood price. It just wasn't. And there we are.
So here we go. Hold on. Diplomatically, instead of accompanying this war strategy with initiative that would buy Israel at least some time, legitimacy and resources to dismantle Hamas, Netanyahu refused to offer any political horizon or exit strategy and expressly ruled out any collaboration with the PA under orders from the Jewish supremacists in his governing coalition.
He's actually like not wrong about a lot of this. Like Netanyahu and in collaboration with those kikes, like
I don't
really
think really
did fuck this up.
I don't think it really had to twist his arm though. Like,
No. They didn't have to twist his arm. My point is though that Friedman is correct.
Yeah,
though.
Sure.
The problem is I don't think that Jews as a collective would ever have done that because it's easy for him to say 6 months down the road with glasses in hindsight. And there were some people saying this stuff at the time, but they were a tiny minority of Jewish voices were saying like, we have to do this in a smart way. Mm-hmm. And, in the end there was a smart way they could have done it. I don't know. I can't like exactly lay it out cause no one knows what would have happened for sure, but they definitely could have done it in a much smarter way than they did it. Like, well, and the fact is that what Netanyahu and his government wanted and the reason they seemingly had no exit strategy because the exit strategy was we bomb the Palestinians in ever progressive blocks, pushing them southward until they all run into Egypt. And they thought they could get away with that, and they couldn't.
This raises an interesting Western liberal democracy question. So they're supposed to be really good allies with America, right? Like buddy.
Great, wonderful allies.
Okay, yeah. So why didn't they consult American military advisors on how to conduct a campaign that would be?
Because they're too triggered. They're just too damn triggered.
They're mad. Like they're
mad.
One,
they
have contempt. And
they know fundamentally
angry.
That no one can really hold them accountable, or the one state that would won't, or that could won't. Yeah. That's all. So
has anyone like just asked that question? Of, like, you know, it looks like America's had some experience with disasters in the Middle East. Have you thought about consulting with them before you also have disaster?
There are actually American generals and military strategists that wouldn't necessarily have had the personal stake that the Jews did. They could have advised them on a much better way.
Yeah, sure, yeah. Absolutely.
There were there were plenty of commentators that were doing it. Mm-hmm. Plenty of commentators were doing it. But again, the thing it's the idea that no one holds them accountable. Like they're being held accountable now.
Right. Well,
exactly the way we want, but they're being held accountable.
I mean hard power. Hard power accountable.
What
that's what I'm saying. That's I know what
it's hard
about.
To sort of always like preface like no one can hold them accountable except in these sort of long-winded, like long-term ways. Yes, in the immediate sense. Nobody will stop them physically from going and doing what they're doing. That's right. Yes.
Right. And basically he goes on to what October 7th did and is really it triggered that response from them. It was if in and of itself, that was all they were trying to do. It was a genius move because he goes on to describe like the these normalization processes that were going on diplomatically with Saudi Arabia and how that was just all basically ruined by the. It's like, yeah, because it ruined Israel's attempt at going out into the world and like getting pulling more legitimacy and see we're good guys, we're not gonna, it's like, no, you're just liars.
Dude.
you're just genocidal maniacs, and it stopped all that, and it stopped all this legitimacy and diplomacy that they were performing, and it basically put an end to all of it. And now it's part. Now it's bound up. All the goals, all this diplomatic goals that they had, that America had too, with Saudi Arabia and other countries in the region, it's all bound up in this. Can you stop genociding Palestinians now, please? Whereas before, it was still on, like, the Palestinian-Israeli conflict was still this, like, low-level, like, everybody ignores it except for, like, Palestinian Twitter accounts with Palestinian media. They're reposting stuff that no one looks at. Like, they brought it out of that realm and into center stage, and now everything's fucked. And there's no coming back.
Before that, it was basically the Saudis were like, all right, like, what concession, like, give us nukes. They basically give us a civilian nuclear program. Massive, like, give us F-35s and nukes. Like, Saudis were just upping their asking price on normalization with Israel, right? But the other thing is, there was the Russian commentators, and I was saying it too in our sphere. Everybody was saying it. We were all saying this, and also, like, some Russia shield commentators saying, like, right away as an immediate result, all that normalization shit is out the window. Like, what if Hamas achieves nothing else? That is just definitely an achievement. Because
Friedman describes it as this was like a war. This was like a road to a two-state solution, which we all know is totally fake. It's a two-state solution is just like you have two states for Israel to just be at war at. Or I'm sorry, two states. They can just keep. Yeah,
there right now, the UN Security Council, like 2 days ago, accepted an application from Palestine for state status.
That's great.
Which is something that I guess the UN Security Council can look at. And so you could, and one of the Jews are going absolutely out of their fucking minds crazy on this, because what that means is then, yes, this is a road to a Palestinian state. Mm-hmm. Going and attacking, and again, when you then, it sort of does is then it reveals, because what they would say is, once again, trying to lean back on like bullshit international liberal premises, like violence isn't the road to a state. I'm like, yes, it fucking is. It's the only road. It's always the road to a state. Violence. The group that does enough violence that nobody can take over them in this one area, that's a fucking state. Period. And ultimately, you recognize that.
But listen to how
every state is like that fundamentally.
Listen to how he dresses this up. We're talking about a game-changing deal. He's talking about normalization with Saudi Arabia in exchange for these two-state solution stuff. Precisely the deal that an Iran-backed Hamas launched this war on October 7th to undermine, because it would have isolated Iran and Hamas. Fuck you. Fuck off.
I don't totally disagree with that, but that's just one of many goals. Like
But that is a goal you highlight to try to make it seem like they did something underhanded and sneaky for like bad reasons, like bad faith.
Yeah,
like,
even if they did it for that
reason, not bad. Stop trying to dress that up like bad faith. Like, you know, it's like
just a goal, right? Yeah. Okay. Mission accomplished.
Because
suck on it.
I'm sorry. A two-state solution with Israel at the head of the negotiating table with America is like, that's going to be bad faith. And when when that gets cemented legitimately into the diplomatic world, now it's facts on the ground. It's even harder to fight back, and they would just be losing. Yeah. So
is what's sort of funny about like facts on the ground's argumentation is that like, you know, and this is sort of what's funny, the whole destiny thing, like him coming in and using the classic Jewish Zionist fact on the ground argumentation technique. It's like now that can just be thrown like directly back in his face. It's like you realize that Jews like. Just pulled out, like facts on the ground are the Jews pulled all but one brigade out.
Yes, but listen to
and like facts on the ground are that they can't kick the Palestinians out now. Destiny, and of course, what would his response? His response would be, well, the problem is he's like advocacy for, and he would then complain like advocacy for Palestine has made this further happen. I'm like, right, that's a fact on the ground,
right?
Like.
So,
you know, facts on the grounds are easy to start and hard to finish. Like,
right.
Once you lose, like, your fact on the ground argumentation can just be thrown in your fucking face.
So here's the fact on the ground that he's continuing that he wants to happen, which takes us to the fork in the road. My preference is that Israel immediately change course, that is, join with Biden, with the Boden administration, children of Boden, in embracing that pathway to a two-state deal that would open the way for Saudi normalization and give cover for the Palestinian Authority and moderate Arab states to try to establish non-Hamas governments in Gaza's, in Israel's place. No, fuck you. Hamas is the governance. Like this, like you don't get a bunch of moderates that are willing to sell out their people and give you their land little by little, like you've done with the PA. The PA has done this for like how long has that been going on? Just like slowly
since
letting
93.
Yeah, for decades, 30 fucking years. Let the Israelis slowly take over the fucking West Bank and all that territory, just little by little. Just let them have it. You do not like that's what they want to set up a two-state solution that is ruled by a government that does that, that plays ball with Jews and gives them what they want slowly instead of all at once.
And that makes
you don't get to have you need to have extremist Arab states. That's who you have to deal with, not moderates. Moderate just means like open the Jewish bullshit.
Moderate means negotiating with Jews.
No, and there is no negotiating with Jews.
Yep.
Anyway. So that's just funny. That's these are the premises we're working on. Even that, and that's such a beg. They're like begging, no, please. Which is why he goes on to like quote this fucking.
He's just mad. Like that can't happen now, and he's basically saying we're gonna have to eat because of the way Netanyahu conducted this. We have to eat a Hamas surviving. Yeah. Nor him saying like a rump Hamas. It's not gonna be a rump much longer. Like they're gonna survive. Yeah. Like, you lost. Like effectively, you lost.
Yep, they lost. So he's gonna, but he tries to salvage it. Like later on, he goes through and he's Yeah, he's quoting this Haaretz reporter. Where is this person? I don't know what they them are. Amira Haas, is that a girl? Amira, yeah. Like I don't know. Like
it's a known person.
Okay.
Been around for a while,
well, I see Amira like by the laws of like the romance languages, like A is feminine. So, but I don't know if that's true or not. Haaretz is well-informed reporter on Palestinian affairs. Goes on to like tell this bullshit story of some people pulling their pack carts. You know, south to get away from the city they lived in that was just destroyed by the Israelis. And they're cursing Sinwar, constantly cursing Sinwar. Gazans opposing Hamas are sure they're the majority. Like, fuck you. You made these people up and you wrote a story to tell Jews that they're winning, to make them feel better. Like, these are just copes. And now Friedman is going to quote this as if this is to continue his hand wringing. And see, we could have done this differently. The donkey cart full of people and mattresses is one of the sites of the war on Gaza in the current siege. More than once, I've heard a cart owner urging his donkey on and saying something like, "Move it, Yahya Sinwar, move it." Yeah, and Yahya Sinwar is the leader of Hamas, I guess. Mm-hmm. Says Basil, a pseudonym, as I've used for everyone in this article. It's not a pseudonym, it's just a made-up person.
So, like, dude, today?
Yeah.
Wow, right now, Jews are bragging that another Hamas leader, Ismail Haniyeh, who is actually, I think he's a one of these political types. They just murdered his three sons. Israel killed three of his sons today. And he's saying, like, he's like, you've martyred my sons. It's not changing anything. Like, you're still going to have to stop. You're still going to have to go away. I mean, dude, on some level, like, I'm sure that guy's, like, shattered, but, like,
I'm sure. That's
the
terrible.
Palestinians have been enduring this kind of thing.
This is what Jews do.
I mean, this is just what they do. This is how they are.
This is what they do. And
like,
we
this
have,
guy is.
And our shit government backs them the whole way because this is who's in charge.
I mean, he's not saying like it doesn't matter to
And they
him,
rely on like mentally ill
right toys.
Be like, yeah,
anything, right?
FAFO, fuck around and find out. That's what you get. That's what you get. This is the American like flexes his
well, that's
impotent
the problem.
Muscle.
Like, this is, I think, the ultimate express. The problem is like what has happened here with Israel is like an expression of how right wingers fail politically. Because Israel seemingly has everything in its favor. They have all this power. They're controlling this super strong empire. But like,
hey, what's up? You know you're only hearing half of the show, right? And it's being indiscriminately interrupted with these sales pitches because we just don't know how else to get your attention and get you over there. Our website, our podcasts are 100% listener funded. They are funded with your subscription. So if you could please do that, help us out. therightstuff.biz/paywall. Thanks.
Because they're behaving like moronic right-wingers, they are losing. And it's just like the inability of like the dumbass, like pseudo-Nietzschean alienated right-winger to actually grasp and understand this. Like you have – what's so funny is you have the edgy like Bapoid sphere like and like Amy Therese and people like this out on Twitter saying like – Israel should – they're basically now mad because they took this side to be edgy and, like, Israel's losing. And they're starting to get that picture too, and they're mad. And they're saying things like, if Israel should have been, like, more genocidal from the beginning, they should have gone harder from the beginning. Like, this is what the Bapsphere is saying. And they're saying them, like, letting – and they're kind of following into – this is kind of a message they want conservatives to have too.
I'm more interested in what the New York Times is saying.
Letting Biden – letting Biden restrain them, letting human rights concerns, letting the Palestinians have anything, letting them have do any of this stuff. This has this is now why. So it's sort of like, now I would just say, yeah, well, it looks like they lost anyway. Ha ha ha. LOL. Like, in the end, the problem with that Nietzschean type philosophy, for lack of a better term, because I actually like Nietzsche. I don't like the way that he's used that way. But the, for lack of a better term for that kind of philosophy, the lack of that, like, fuck you, I'm in charge, I do what I want. Like, whenever that fails, they can always blame it on, like, not doing it hard enough. But it's like, you don't do it hard enough at the beginning because you know that doing that engenders reaction. Like, you know what I mean?
I do what,
like,
I will.
I don't know. It's just, it's like, and then they can always say to conservatives, but this is what they want conservatives to believe. They want them to believe, like, Biden's, like, bleeding heart libtardism. And they'll even let white people be, like, a little bit racist here. Like, his bleeding heart liberalism for Browns is why he stopped Israel from doing what is necessary. It's like, no, that's stupid. That's right. Dumb.
So to come
people
back
that before... do those kind of politics lose. You don't understand how it works.
So to come back briefly before we go for a break to Friedman again, more begging with the universe. This kind of plays into the attitude of that leader who just lost his three sons to Israeli genocidal violence. The reaction, like... Do you think that he's going to suddenly disavow Hamas and not fight for his people anymore?
Yeah, what is that going to do to this?
So
what is
anyway,
that gonna, like,
so he writes about without that incident in his calculus here. I have no illusions that the morning after a ceasefire commences and Sinwar comes out, some will wildly cheer him for the hurt he inflicted on Israel. But the morning after, Sinwar will face brutal questioning from Gazans. Where's my house? Where's my job? Who gave you the right to expose my children to death and devastation? It is the best punishment I can imagine for Sinwar. Let him own all of Gaza's travails. He's so recklessly exacerbated. Not Israel. Fuck you, Jew. That is so beyond things that are not going to happen. God, there's this fantasy land in which the Gaza Strip is like under the yoke of evil Hamas, and they just want to give up all their sovereignty, and they just like their occupation, and they wish these pain in the ass Hamas fighters would stop fighting for the right. That does not exist. No one is going to look at
another problem for that. Like, so from the Jews' perspective, is when you do things like kill the families of the leaders of Hamas, you put them in the same boat as the rest of Palestine. So you don't. You know what I mean? Like, because they were trying to do this thing where at the beginning where they're showing like Hamas living at large in Qatar while like the Palestinians suffer. And they use these photos that were of like a Hamas diplomatic visit from years ago to Qatar where these Hamas guys were on a plane. They were on a plane. It wasn't even the funny thing is they were acting like it was such a luxury. Like it was just a plane. They're on a plane and they go to Qatar and then in Qatar, they're in a hotel and they show them like playing ping pong and riding the exercise bikes and stuff.
Ping pong.
And it didn't even look, it didn't even look that luxurious. Like it wasn't, it was fine, but it wasn't like super luxurious. And they're like living large in Qatar while Palestinians suffer. And I'm like, they're not living that large.
So anyway,
like playing ping pong and right. And anyway, but what Ismail Haniyeh said is, well, he makes a statement about they were martyred, and then he says, like, 60 members of my extended family have been murdered by Israel over the years.
Good God.
So when that's the status of a Hamas leader, he is not different than the other Palestinians.
Everyone has the same
All of them have family that were killed
they all have the same
by
experience.
Israel. Yeah. So you cannot then break that relationship.
So
you know, like, you can't say, this guy is just lording it over you. He's not like you. It's like, they're like... They've just killed my three sons. And dude, listen to this. The three men were struck by a drone launch missile traveling in their car on the way to celebrate with relatives on the occasion of the Muslim holiday of Eid al-Fitr, begins today. So on the way to a religious family celebration,
so much for
get droned.
So much for not doing any strikes during that holy time, yeah. So he says here. So he like that's that makes this sentence even funnier before we go. He says he follows that up with only Palestinians can delegitimize Hamas. And though it won't be easy,
and Hamas will kill anyone to hold power. Again, here's like the other thing they do is they pretend that like Palestinians are just they're just homicidal maniacs that wherever you plop them down, they're gonna start a suicide bombing campaign. It's not got nothing to do with the actual conflict between Israel and Palestine. It's just Palestinians. Like if you bring them to Egypt, they're just gonna start terrorizing Egypt anyway. Hamas will kill anyone to hold power, and this time we won't be talking about just a handful of dissidents.
Well, Hamas will fucking kill collaborators with Israel, but that's something that's generally approved of in Palestinian society.
Well, they're not a handful. If someone's they're found not a handful out of as a collaborator,
they get fucking smoked.
They're not a minority that's tenuously holding on to control of their little region by force.
They
that's
are
not
representative of
that's Israel
majority Palestine opinion. Yes.
Israel is tenuous is holding on weakly to power in their region through threat of force.
And frankly, the Israelis have been sort of like lying that like Netanyahu and his Netanyahu is unpopular, not because he's a genocidal maniac, but because he's failing.
Yeah,
because
he's not winning. That's why he's
like that's the issue. Like he's unpopular because he's a failure.
Right.
Like if he was winning, and if it, like 80% of Israelis want to kick everyone out of Gaza.
Yeah.
Anyway. Like that's the supermajority opinion in Israel. So yeah.
So with that, let's take a break, and maybe we'll do this Hebrew Heretz article when we come back. But for now, lunch.
Yeah. You are listening to The Daily Shower, as racist and sexist as they can be. We're going to offend you, isn't it funny? La, 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 la.